let us know when we come to Him that He is the One. We come and openly examine the Scriptures and openly examine His life. If we're honest about it, we'll have to come to the conclusion that He is who He said He was and who the prophets and who Moses in the law had prophesied about that was going to come. He was the One. And so Philip just says, hey, you know what? You come see and you'll find out. And so Nathanael comes along with him. And when Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him, He said, behold, an Israelite indeed in whom is no God. Nothing fake about Nathanael. Isn't it good to know people who are genuine, who are real? They're not fake. They don't put on a show. They just are who you think they are. They don't hide anything. They're not secretive. That's the kind of person that Nathanael was. Nathanael said, well, how do you know me? Where do you know me from? Whence knowest thou me? The King James says, how did you know me? We haven't met before, have we? And so Jesus then says, well, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Now we might not think that's anything very spectacular. I saw you under a fig tree. Well, so? Apparently that fig tree was a secret place. Wasn't a place where other people would have been and would have seen him. It was a private place for him. Perhaps a place even where he went to pray or to spend time with God. And he was under that fig tree. It's an amazing thing then. His response to that, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. He didn't take much convincing, did he? It wasn't hard to get Nathanael to believe this. He just jumped in. Oh, you saw me under the fig tree? Then you must be the Son of God. How else would you have known I was under there? But then Jesus said to him, you mean just because I said I saw you under the fig tree, you believe? You know, I tell you, you know, it's wonderful to find somebody who believes so genuinely. They're so open and honest and easily believe these things. I saw this morning that some folks, even after proof after proof after proof, they still don't believe the next time they're told something. We're talking that in class this morning. And sometimes, several times, and people still doubt. But Nathanael, this first thing, he already believed. And Jesus said, you will see greater things than these. And He said to him, truly I say unto you, hereafter you shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Now I'm not sure exactly when Nathanael saw that particular event that Jesus was talking about there. I don't know when he saw that. But if Jesus promised him that he was going to get to see it, even though it's not recorded for us in the Scriptures, apparently Nathanael got to see that at some point. I don't know if that was when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane after he had been praying and the Lord and God sent angels to comfort him before his death. Don't know if they saw that happen then. Don't know if they saw those angels. Don't know if it was some other time during his ministry that they saw these things. But they saw them because Jesus promised him he would. Well, getting back to Philip for a minute, Jesus tested Philip. In John chapter 6 and verses 5 and 7, Jesus lifted up his eyes. He saw a great company coming. And he said to Philip, where are we going to buy bread so all these people can eat? He said this to prove him or to test him, for he himself knew what he would do already. He wanted to see, Philip, where's your faith at this point? How far along the path have you come? And you know, the Bible clearly tells us that God can't be tempted with evil, and He doesn't tempt any of us. None of us should ever say that we're tempted by God, but God does test us. He does send us some little things. Say, how's your faith coming along? How are you doing in your spiritual walk with me? Are you growing like you should? Can you handle this? Can you handle that? Are you ready for this yet? He tests us. He tests Philip here. How do you think Philip did on that test? Did he pass or did he fail? Philip's answer was, the King James says 200 penny worth. By modern calculation, that would basically be about 9 months' salary worth. So here in the United States, the average salary is about $50,000. So 9 months' worth of that would be somewhere between $35,000 to $40,000. And he said even that much money wouldn't feed all these folks. I don't know, I've never fed 5,000 people. That's how many there actually were in that crowd, but I can imagine it could easily cost several thousand dollars. And you take 5,000 people, even if you took them to, you know, some place like Ryan's where they had a nice lunch special buffet for $6 or $7 each, you're up to $35,000 right quick. So it would take a lot of money to buy food for all these folks, and that's basically what. So we see 200 penny worth, and we're thinking, $2? $2? No, that's not Philip's point. Philip's point is 9 months worth of money. 9 months worth of wages. 9 months income would not feed all these people. And we can see that when we think about 5,000 people and how much it would cost us to feed 5,000 people. And so Philip's looking at that and saying, there's no way. That wouldn't even get every one of them a little bit, even if we had that much. We couldn't get enough to feed them all. Of course, we know what Jesus did. He took that little lunch that that boy had and fed them all with that little bit that probably cost his mama one penny. Well, Philip, even though he didn't exactly score an A+ on that test, he was still faithful to the Lord. He still continued to grow. He still continued to learn. Jesus, you know, just because we fail a test, Jesus doesn't say, oh, well, you're out. He gives us a chance to make it up. Take a makeup test later on. He gives us a chance to grow some more, and then he tests us again to see how we're coming along. And that's what he did with Philip as well. And it's interesting, when people wanted to see Jesus, they came to Philip. John chapter 12, verses 21 and 22. The same came therefore to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, Sir, we would see Jesus. Philip went and told Andrew, and Andrew and Philip told Jesus. We looked at this from Andrew's side of it before. Well, let's think about this. There are 12 apostles. Philip is not the one that's the closest to Jesus. Why do you suppose they picked him out of the group to come up to and approach and say, hey, we want to get to see Jesus? Why'd they pick him? Why didn't they pick John? Why didn't they pick Simon the Zealot? Why didn't they pick Judas Iscariot? Why'd they pick Philip? Oh, I don't know for sure. Suppose it's within the realm of possibility that they knew Philip beforehand, although there's no indication of that. I think about a story that's told from back in the early days of our nation when Thomas Jefferson was president. He and some other people were traveling, and they came to a river to cross it. And as they got to that river, it was kind of deep. It wasn't too deep for the horses, but it was kind of scary for someone who maybe hadn't done that before. And one of the men on the trip there, together with the others, he was a little scared. And he looked around, and he asked President Jefferson, will you help me get my horse across the river? And the president said, sure, and helped him get the horse across the river. And after they got to the other side, somebody came up to him and said, why did you ask the President of the United States to do that for you? He said, I didn't know he was the president. They said, well, then why did you pick him? He said, as I looked around at all the faces as we were there at the side of the river to go across, some of them had no written on them. And others had yes, and he had yes on his face. And so I wonder if Philip had a yes on his face as those people who came wanting to see Jesus, they looked at him and they said, if we ask him, he's going to say no. But hey, he'll say yes. I don't know. But Philip brought them to see Jesus. He helped get them to where they wanted to be. You know, it's always a good thing to help people see Jesus. And we need to be careful not to ever get in the way of somebody seeing Jesus. We want them to be able to see Jesus clearly. We don't want to block the view. Philip had some high ambitions too. In John chapter 14 and verses 8 and 9, Philip said, Lord, show us the Father and that suffices us. He didn't ask for much, did he? Jesus, just let us see God. Now forget the fact that no one else in the history of the world had ever seen God's face and lived. Philip says, Lord, we will just show us the Father. That'll be good enough. He didn't ask much, does he? But you know, it's interesting, Jesus' response to him. He said, have I been so long time with you, and yet you've not known me, Philip? Philip's still not passing that test yet, is he? But that's not unusual. None of the other apostles are doing a great job at passing tests at this point either. In fact, it's not until the day of Pentecost that they really start kicking it into gear and doing well. They struggled along before that. But notice what he says. He that has seen me has seen the Father. And how can you say, show us the Father? He said, Philip, I've been showing you the Father for 3 years here while I've been going around teaching you and everything. What, have you not been paying attention? That's what I've been showing you. How many times do we ask Jesus, well, Lord, you know, if you just, I've been praying about this thing, if you just point me in the right direction, and you know, he slammed doors in our face in one area and opened doors in other areas to let us go the right way, and we keep jamming up against that locked door trying to get through it, and there's an open door standing right over there, and we won't go through it. And I know sometimes he's probably just up there scratching his head, saying, there's an open door right there, go over there. I opened that door for you so you could go. And he probably feels just as frustrated with us as he did with Philip when Philip asked, oh, just show us the Father. Sometimes we can be just as thick-headed as some of the apostles were. Sometimes we read about that and they're like, what? They were there with Jesus. Why didn't they believe? Why didn't they think? We were talking about that this morning. Here he'd do these miracles and people wouldn't believe. Just like with this situation where he'd fed the 5,000. And then later on he fed the 4,000. And then a little later they're in a boat and he's telling them to beware of the yeast or the leaven of the Pharisees. And they're worried. They think he's worried because they didn't bring any bread on the boat. And he had to remind them, look, didn't you see what I did? When I fed 5,000 people with just a little bit of food, and I fed 4,000 people with just a little bit of food, and you took up more food at the end than we had when we started, and you think I'm worried about a little piece of bread right now. That's not the point. I'm trying to tell you about their teaching and the dangers of it. And they just, and we think, oh, they were just so thick-headed. But we're the same way. We would have been in the same boat. We would have been just like them. It would have been about as clear as muddy water for us, just like it was for them. It's because of their being rebuked and corrected and taught and that being written down for us. What's the old saying? Hindsight is 20/20. It's easy for us to look back on it and say, why, they should have known better. But if we had been there at that same time, would we have known any better? It's easy to look back on it with clear vision, but it wasn't as clear to them at the time. And then finally with Nathanael, you know, sometimes people say, oh, so-and-so's pretty lucky. And they say that about a lot of different things. And sometimes, I know there's just things that are coincidence, but you know, a lot of times what's attributed to luck is really not luck at all. It was hard work. I know, you know, sometimes somebody worked hard for years building a business and became a millionaire. And somebody said, well, you're so lucky. Now they forget that they worked those 90 and 100 hour weeks to get that thing going. In short on sleep and all those kind of, oh, you're so lucky you got that much money. They worked hard to get there. Sometimes we think people are lucky when really it was the choices that they made and the decisions that they made and the work that they did that got them to that point. And I think about that with Nathanael. In John 21, verses 1 and 2, Jesus showed himself to some of the disciples, and Nathanael was one of them. He said, oh, Nathanael was lucky to be there and get to see Jesus. Well, think about why he got to see Jesus. He was in the right place. And he was there at the right time. But see, the reason that was the right place and the right time was because he was there with the right people. Peter and James and John and Thomas and two of the other disciples and Nathanael were there together. If Nathanael had been off by himself somewhere else, he would have missed it. It wasn't just luck. It was because he was with the right people that he was at the right time and in the right place. And sometimes people have problems in life. It's not just bad luck. It's because they're with the wrong people and they're in the wrong places and they're there at the wrong time, and that gets them into all kinds of trouble. It's the choices we make that make an impact. The fact that Nathanael chose to follow Jesus in the first place changed the course of his life. Wonder where it would have gone if he'd have just left that with, well, can anything good come out of Nazareth? I don't think so. I'm not going to go with you, Philip, to check that out. I got more important things to do. And he'd gone off. What direction would his life have taken? It wouldn't have been the same. And so it is with us. Well, let's move quickly through a couple more of these. Thomas. Thomas is called Didymus. Some people think Didymus means doubter. It's not. Didymus means twin. Thomas was a twin. I think that's kind of neat, since I got twins. But the fact that he was a twin didn't keep him from being a unique individual. And sometimes we think, well, twins are twins. They're identical. They're the same. No, they're not. Thomas and his twin weren't alike. His twin was not a disciple, or at least not an apostle of Jesus. Don't know if his twin followed Jesus and believed in Jesus or not. We have no record of it. But we know his twin wasn't one of the apostles. But he was. He was a unique individual. He made choices in his life that took his life down a different path. And each of us does that. We talked about that with Nathanael too. Each one of us gets to make choices in our lives. And the choices we make lead us to where we are now and will continue to lead us to where we go in the future. We have the choice to make those turns in our life. Even though Thomas is often called the doubter and people look down on, doubting Thomas. That's even, people that aren't even Christians use that phrase. Well, you're a doubting Thomas. Do you realize that in John chapter 11 and verse 16, when Jesus was going to go back to Jerusalem, and the disciples said, Lord, they tried to kill you the last time you were around there. And Jesus said, well, I've got to go back. Who do you suppose is the one that spoke up and said, let's go with him and we'll just go and die with him? Sounds like something Peter would say, doesn't it? Wasn't Peter. It was Thomas. Thomas is the one that spoke up and said, well, if he's going, I'm going too, even if I have to die with him. Let's go. And then the other apostles said, yeah, well, we'll go too. But Thomas was the one. Doesn't sound like a doubting Thomas to me. Sounded like he was pretty full of faith at that time. He was a man. This is a special man. He was a man who was not afraid to ask for directions. I know there's not many men like that that will stop and ask for directions. But Thomas was one who would. In fact, in John 14 and verse 5, Jesus has been talking about I'm the way and the truth and the life and all these things. And he's talking about, come follow me. I'm going. You can't go right now, but I'll come. You can come later and all these things. And Thomas says, Lord, We don't know where you're going. How are we going to know the way? How do we get there? He wanted some directions. He wanted to know where are you going and how are we going to get there? And that's, of course, when Jesus then said, I'm the way and the truth and life. Come, follow me. Well, despite that, the thing that he's probably the most remembered for was the one time when he was skeptical. I don't like to think of him necessarily as skeptical, though. I like to think of him as somebody who's just not gullible. You ever heard the saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is? Now, none of these guys had ever known of anyone coming back from the dead. Dead people died and they stayed dead. That's the way that worked. That's the way it still works. And so, when Thomas was not with the other disciples one time, and Jesus came, and the other disciples had seen him, but Thomas didn't get to see him. He wasn't there that time. The other disciples said to him, Thomas, we've seen the Lord. Now, I don't know about that. That sounds a little too good to be true. And so Thomas said, I'm not going to believe it unless I can see him. And not just see him, because, you know, I don't. Maybe a ghost, you know. I might just be his ghost. I want to put my finger in his hand where the nail print is, and I want to put my hand in the side where it was. And he said, unless I can do that, I won't believe that it's really him risen from the dead. Might just be your imagination. Maybe you hallucinate and seeing what you want to see. Maybe it's a ghost. But unless I can touch him, I'm not going to believe it's really him risen from the dead. Now, we fault Thomas a lot for that. But let's be honest. If somebody we knew had died, and somebody came back and told us they're alive again, would we believe it? Now, we jump on him. We pick on him, you know. Well, he saw the other miracles Jesus did, you know. He saw Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead. But that's not quite the same thing as somebody raising themselves from the dead. So we have to wonder. You know, he was faithful. But then he became faithless at this point. In fact, in John 20, in verses 26 through 29, Jesus says to him, go ahead, reach here your finger, look at my hand, reach your hand, put it in my side, and do not be faithless, but believing. Jesus gave Thomas that proof. Now, if we were to say the same thing today, Jesus isn't going to give us that proof. He gave it to Thomas. But he's not continuing to do those things today for us. We have the miracles written in the Bible. And in fact, if we can believe what is written and believe based on the knowledge of the past that we have that certain things are going to be in the future as God has promised, Jesus said something interesting. After Thomas did believe and he confessed, you are my Lord and my God. And Jesus said, Thomas, because you've seen me, you believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. That's us, isn't it? There's a song, We Saw Thee Not. When you walked the earth, we didn't see you, Jesus. We didn't see you when you died on the cross. We didn't see you in the tomb. We didn't see you rise from the dead. We didn't see you when you rose back up to heaven and ascended again. We didn't see that. The song says, but we believe. Jesus tells us that's a greater faith than Thomas had. Thomas, who was ready to go die with him. But we have a greater faith if we can be willing to come to the faith in Him without having to see it with our eyes. And that's really what faith is knowing something's true without being able to see it. And it's amazing all the areas of our life where we have faith, and yet in religion we struggle so many times. Well, the last few real quickly, because there's not nearly as much about any of them. Matthew, we looked at in Matthew 9:9 a little bit. Matthew reminds us that Jesus doesn't pick us because we're so great or because He needs us, but because we need Him. And it's a reminder to us that where we're going and what we're going to become is more important than where we've been and who we used to be. Matthew, Levi, he was a tax collector. He was despised. He may have even been a little crooked. We don't know. Some of them were. A lot of them were. But Jesus chose him and changed him. And He can change us as well. James the Less, the son of Alphaeus, he may have been younger. That may have been why he was called the Less. He may have been called the Less because he was lesser known than the other James. Or it could have been because he was a younger James, or younger brother to someone else, perhaps. But you know, he carried on a good family tradition of following Jesus. In Mark 15 and verses 40 and 41, it says, "There were also looking on afar off, among whom," and this is that Jesus' crucifixion and burial, "these women were there, among whom was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James the Less, and of Joseph, and Salome, who also, when he was in Galilee, followed him and ministered unto him, and many other women which came up with him unto Jerusalem." Realize a lot of these women were more faithful to Jesus than His own disciples. The women were standing there by the cross, and John was there, and the rest of the disciples were nowhere to be found. They'd all run off and hid, but the women were still there. They were stronger in their faith and in their love and devotion to Him than His own apostles. But James the Less, his mother was one of those women who had ministered to Jesus. She'd been there with Him all along the way. He was following in good footsteps, following his mother's example of following the Lord. Thaddeus, also called Judas, Levius, and the brother of James, not the brother of James the Less necessarily, but just the brother of James. He's spoken of in John 14:21-26. The only time he speaks that we know of in the Scriptures. And he says in John 14:21-26, as Jesus is telling them, "Keep my commandments. If you love me and you love the Father, and you know, you'll be loved by my Father if you'll keep my commandments, and I'll love him, and I will manifest myself to him," he says. And in verse 22, Judas said unto him, not Iscariot, see, not Judas Iscariot, but this other Judas, said unto him, "Lord, how are you going to manifest yourself to us and not the world? How are you going to do that?" It's a neat trick. How are you going to show us without other people seeing? How are you going to be able to accomplish that task? And so Jesus answered him. He said, "If you keep my words, my Father will love you. We'll come, we'll make our home with him. He that doesn't love me, doesn't keep my sayings, the word which you hear, he's not mine. But the word that you hear is not mine, it's but the Father's which sent me. These things I've spoken to you, being present with you yet. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I've said unto you." So because Judas asked this question, they got to find out a little more about the Comforter. Now, I'm sure Jesus was going to tell them about the Comforter anyway, but this sparked the conversation. This started the conversation to allow him an opening for this teaching. "Let me tell you about this Comforter I'm going to send. That's how I'm going to reveal myself to you. and not to everybody else in the world, because not everybody else in the world is going to receive this Comforter. Only my apostles are going to get this special gift. And He's going to teach you all things and bring all things to your remembrance, whatever I've said to you. Everything. Well, then there's Simon the Zealot. The only times he's mentioned is when he's mentioned in the list with everybody else. We know he was a very active political sort because he's a zealot. That was almost a terrorist organization of the day who wanted to kill off all the Romans. Kind of odd to have him in there with Matthew the tax collector too, isn't it? I bet that was an interesting group relationship going on between those two. But you know, even though he's never singled out for any particular reason, he never is quoted as asking a question or saying anything or anything else of significance. As far as we know, he was faithful to the Lord all the way to his death. We know nothing any different than that. And you know, Simon reminds us that we don't have to be famous to be faithful. We don't have to be well known. We don't have to have chapters written about us in the Bible or biographies in the libraries in order to be pleasing to God. Simon's name was written in the book of life right along with Peter's, even though we know a lot more about Peter than we do Simon. But they were both written right there in that same book. We don't have to be famous. We don't have to be popular. We just have to be faithful. One of the things about these folks that are somewhat lesser known is they all remind us of that. That God will take us, and with His expectations, He expects more from some than others. Now I know, as far as salvation goes, He's laid out a flat plane. This is how you have to be saved. But you know, He also tells us that to whom much is given, much will be required. Some have more ability. Some have more talent. Some have more opportunity than others. And He expects us to take advantage of that, whatever that advantage that we have is. Some die young. Some live longer. They have more time. Some were converted young in life. Some were converted older in life and don't have as much time to serve the Lord. I recall one story. I never met the woman. She was dead before I heard the story about her. But where they said, they used to call her Sister Bessie. They said, Sister Bessie said, she was nearly 80 years old before she was converted to Christ. After she was converted, she said, I lived most of my life for the devil. I'm going to live as much of the rest of it as I possibly can for the Lord. And that needs to be our goal. To live our lives for the Lord. We may not ever be famous. We may not ever accomplish some great, tremendous thing. But you know, the little bricks, the little 2x4s, even the ones that are hidden in the walls, you know, they're real important to the building of a building. Every bit is important. We may be hidden. We may be that 2x4 that's in the wall and not ever seen. But we still can do great things for the Lord by being faithful to Him throughout our lives and all the way to the end of our lives. Tonight, if you perhaps need to follow the example of some of these lesser known apostles, be an example to those around you. Follow Jesus. Continue learning. Face His tests, and if you fail one test, study some more and get ready for the next one. Another one's coming. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.